Archbishop of San Salvador, the current Archbishop. Below, in the crypt of Romero, you had hundreds of people crammed up into this humid room, basically with carrying pictures of their martyrs, carrying pictures of Romero, celebrating, singing, and talking about justice and God in one voice. And so that's kind of the tale of two churches here. And so you have the conservative church hierarchy and the elites, you know, the those that have continued the oligarchy from the 1980s and been expanded into the financial sector, have joined forces to pressure the Vatican to not beatify Romero. They sent letters. They did what the U.S. has been doing while Romero was alive. Fortunately, that didn't work. And as my friend Carlos Dada, a prominent journalist who wrote a good piece in The New Yorker, said, he said that, you know, this is a moral victory for El Salvador. So in terms of what it means for El Salvador, it means it's a moral victory. It's a validation that, you know, your dead were there with Romero. There were people, they read the names of the martyrs that have died. Church people, non-church people, you know, 80,000 dead, 95% of whom were killed by the U.S.-backed government, according to the United Nations Truth Commission.
Roberto Lovato, we have to leave it there, but I want to thank you for being with us, writer and visiting scholar at UC Berkeley Center for Latino Policy Research. We'll link to his reports at democracynow.org. Speaking to us from San Salvador, I'm Amy Goodman with Aaron Mate. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our host, Joe Uris. Today, we'll talk about the national security state.
KBOO is proud to partner with Hopworks Urban Brewery for their Community Tap program. Every month, Hopworks features a local nonprofit organization, and May's Community Tap is your community radio, KBOO. Hopworks is located at 2944 Southeast Powell Boulevard in Portland. For more information on Hopworks and their Community Tap program, you can go to kboo.fm/hub.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Student Debtors Assembly, Thursday, May 28th, 2 p.m. in the Park Block at Southwest Harrison in Portland. A debtors' assembly is a public forum to talk about debt, to dispel stigmas, myths, and taboos about debt, to learn about debt, and to organize to change the state of debt in our lives. There will be presentations from organizers, academics, debtors, artists, and musicians, and there will be opportunities for everyone to share openly about their debt and how it affects their lives. Again, that's the Student Debtors' Assembly, Thursday, May 28th at 2 p.m. on the PSU Park Block near Southwest Harrison. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage on the community events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Five Centers for the Arts, presenting The Bicycle Men, a bawdy musical comedy featuring Second City alumni. The Bicycle Men tells the story of Steve, a hapless American cyclist whose bike breaks down in a small French village. The Bicycle Men on stage June 5th through June 7th at the Winningstad Theater. Tickets and information at portland5.com.
Ooh, ah, hello, NSA, I just called you to say I love you.
I love you
because you,
because you
really listen. Now when I'm on the phone, well, I never feel alone, 'cause you're out there with your headphones.
Hello.
And you really listen.
I just couldn't resist. And Steve found it, and I I needed a little, we need a little love here. You know, it's getting kind of grim out there. This is KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. I'm Joe. Abe ain't here. The number to call, 231-8187. We do want to hear from you. We got a very serious program. We're going to talk about the essence of our system, and we're going to challenge you to respond to some of the obvious problems that exist. Abe was going to be here, but he had a family emergency which took him away. So it's just me and you, and you're going to get the call. But first, I want to suggest that we all listen to President Dwight David Eisenhower's final speech in 1960. It's really important. A lot of you probably heard it, but let's just listen again.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Good evening, my fellow Americans. We now stand 10 years past the midpoint of a century that has witnessed four major wars among great nations. Until the latest of our world conflicts, the United States had no armaments industry. American makers of plowshares could, with time and as required, make swords as well. But we can no longer risk emergency improvisation of national defense. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. Added to this, 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. Now, this conjunction of an immense military establishment and a large arms industry is new in the American experience. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development. Yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. Our toil, resources, and livelihood are all involved. So is the very structure of our society. In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
I decided that we really needed to hear that again. I think a lot of you probably remember it, and a lot of you are certainly aware of it in kind of a mythic sense. Eisenhower, as you know, was the hero, the leader of the American and United Allied forces against the Nazis. He went on to briefly run Columbia University, and then, of course, was chosen as the Republican candidate, successful candidate, in 1952 and again in 56 as President of the United States. The Eisenhower administration was not an outstanding example of progressivism. So it is all the more important that we understand that Eisenhower, who by no means, again, by no means was a leftist or a liberal, became more and more concerned about the rise of the military-industrial complex. We are now at the stage in our history where the tail, the military-industrial complex tail, wags the dog of our nation. And it is a real crisis. It is a crisis which also includes, of course, the power, the enormous power of capital to ravage the environment, to destroy the lives of ordinary people, to create actually a permanent underclass throughout the world, and particularly throughout the United States. It is in this context that we're going to talk about this whole issue.
The original plan for the show was to talk about an article which was written by Tufts University's Michael Glennon, Vote All You Want, The Secret Government Won't Change. And the argument there was that essentially the power and the pattern of holding that is characteristic of our system does not alter, despite the fact that we have different Republican or Democratic administrations, liberal or conservative, so-called. I think more important than that, however, beyond all of that, is the fact of the rise of the military-industrial complex, which is the spearhead of a monopoly capitalist system. And I characterize this time in history in the United States as late-stage capitalism. I also have used the term friendly fascism to describe our system at this point. We know that enormously serious changes can, in fact, take place under an administration, which disagrees with the article, by the way. But the fact of the matter is that Ronald Reagan led us into a situation very much like, you know, as is the one we exist in today. And that, interestingly enough, President Clinton did away with the welfare system that helped poor people survive in an ever more ugly and more difficult economic circumstance. We also know that Barack Obama, for whom many of us had great hopes, turned out to be, despite his ethnicity, turned out to be basically a follower of the normative expectations of the system. Some good things, but many, many really scary ones, including a failure to adequately protect the environment and a serious intention to create a worldwide economic structure that will not protect American workers or the environment or the health of Americans. All of this is happening, again, in the context of a system which is monopoly capital based. And when we understand that, we then have to turn our attention to, well, how do we feel about that? Are we willing to struggle against it? What kind of a struggle should we mount? And where does that really go? And that's what I want to ask you about. What should be done? How should we do it? Do we agree, all of us, that this is really an analysis that has validity? I use the Eisenhower speech because the authority of this very conservative man is unquestionable. His observation about the pattern of the development of military-industrial power is also unquestioned and unquestionable. There are writers, very famous ones, in sociology, William Domhoff, G. William Domhoff, who wrote a book called Who Really Rules. These are old sources, by the way. And the most famous of these books, 1956, I believe, C. Wright Mills' The Power Elite, both of which actually describe, and in the case of both of them, enumerate the various powerful forces. Now, the names change. Even the corporate names change. But the fact of that power does not seem to be altered. The fact that the banks were never punished for the Great Recession. The fact of the matter is that we are seeing a greater and greater concentration of power in media, in industry, and we see deals being made which have tremendous, profound effect on all our lives and are essentially being undercovered, underreported by the press. Meanwhile, on the most domestic of scenes, we see a police force everywhere that is out of control, that sees itself as a defender of basically white privilege. This is a very serious, all of these are very serious, serious problems. As the environment deteriorates, as global warming becomes more and more an obvious fact, as denial continues, and as opportunism goes on unabated, it becomes incumbent upon all of us, whatever our so-called political perspectives, left, right, center, doesn't matter, to begin to make an analysis which can lead, hopefully, to the restoration or the creation, maybe even, of a true democracy in the United States. So I open it up to you. What is to be done? How is it to be done? And let's have a very frank discussion of this. It wasn't exactly what we'd planned for today, but it'll work real well. And you, if you'll participate, will get a chance to talk. 231-8187. I'm going to wait for your calls. I'm going to hope for your calls. And I'm going to expect your calls. I know many of you are very, very careful in your analysis. And many of you are perhaps even angry about things that are going on today. Remember, the issues are multifold. The environmental issues, the military-industrial complex issues, the trade issues, the racism issues. And all of these, I hold, are at root part of a process which has continued to put power in the hands of a relatively small number of incredibly powerful, incredibly wealthy individuals. Let's go to our first caller. Who is it? Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe. Yeah, this is a great subject. Naomi Klein just wrote a book that, what's the name of it? Capitalism versus the Climate. It's actually, This Changes Everything is the title.
Yeah, This Changes Everything, right.
Yeah. And her point is that because the climate is such a crisis, if you look at what's really going on with the climate, what the scientists are telling us, we really can't afford not to take over our government. And it's like all the issues, police violence, health care, everything, it needs to be part of a movement that takes it away from the corporate power. That's really what we've got to do. It seems impossible. It seems like a huge thing, but as a climate activist, I'm starting to see that people are starting to recognize that. And what we really need to do is mobilize our resources like we did in World War II. That's the best model for what's possible. And fix this thing as much as we can. I'm a little skeptical that we're going to be able to totally turn it around, but we could at least slow it down and maybe make it not as bad as it could be. Because when the exhaust that came out of your tailpipe, the carbon dioxide came out of your tailpipe this morning driving down to Cebu, I presume that's how you got there, is going to be in the atmosphere for 75 years. And it's already having a huge effect on our climate, and it's just that barely getting started. So that's what I got to say.
Cool. I thank you for the call, Dave, and we agree on this whole question. The challenge, and I'm going to let you go, but the challenge really for all of us is how can this be done? The great fiction of our society is that we're an open democracy and anything can be achieved by the people, and the old slogan of the left, the people united will never be defeated. I'm not sure whether or not we as a people can unite and make a good analysis and struggle continuously for what will be quite a long period of time to gain, and I don't say regain, but to gain control of our democracy. And to put a limit on the incredible power of monopoly capital and what is a remarkably short-sighted vision by those who hold so much wealth and power. Let's hear from other callers, 231-8187. Ed, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My comment is this. If you really want to understand what's going on, you have to begin with a correct perspective. And I just wanted to use an example. For example, if say we never figured out that the sun is the center of the solar system, if we thought that the sun revolved around the Earth, lots of other things would be mistaken. Because we're beginning from an incorrect perspective. Now, my point is, regarding the beginning of this most recent century, and that has to do with September 11. So are you good? What I want to say, and I'm not going to try to explain what happened, but I believe that if we continue to think that when we were attacked by terrorists, for whatever reason, if you want to believe that they hate our democracy or hate our freedom or whatever you want to believe, if you believe that our billion-dollar military structure failed on that day, then all of the things that happen after that will be mistaken, because you're beginning from that perspective. I believe that, well, I don't want to really get into what I believe. I think you probably get from what I just said that there's lots of information out there that we haven't been given.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other attacks that we've made in Syria and Libya and Egypt and, you know, our focus on Iran and the relationship with Israel in the Middle East will not make sense if we don't begin from a different perspective on what happened. Anyway, what do you think?
Well, I think I appreciate your point. I'm not one of those who believes that 9/11 was extremely different from what has been described. I think, though, there are some real questions about exactly where the motives and the power came from. We now have a better understanding of the role of Saudi military princes and powerful figures in encouraging al-Qaeda. Whether or not the Saudi government itself was involved, I don't know or think that that's the most significant force involved.
If I could direct your listeners,
yeah,
to one something that they can look at on YouTube, and this was on the day of September 11 when the Pentagon was attacked.
Mm-hmm.
It was a CNN report, and it was the moderator was, or the anchor person was Judy Woodruff, who now works for PBS, and a reporter was on the scene. He was the very first person on the scene. So if your listeners would go to YouTube and just type in September 11 CNN report, it's very eye-opening. The first guy on the scene, the words out of his mouth was, "Judy, there's no evidence here of an airliner striking the building."
That is interesting. I've never seen that footage. So
there's a big gaping hole in the side of the Pentagon, and he said, "Now the building recently collapsed, or part of the outer structure had recently collapsed, so the hole wasn't that big originally." But he said, "There is nothing, no fuselage, no luggage, no body parts, no anything at the Pentagon." So anyway, I would encourage your listeners to look at that footage, and then call and see what they think about it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for the call.
Thank you for my call.
Sure. I don't want us to get sidetracked into a conversation about the nature of the 9/11 attack. There are many, many, many contradictory facts and opinions on this particular topic. I really want to look at the larger issue of the power that we all face in the looming crisis, both of freedom and democracy, and in the environment itself. And I think that the approach that all of us need to take is one of organization and struggle, which will be hard, which will be difficult. But if it is not undertaken effectively with a decent analysis, we ain't going nowhere. We are not going to be successful. Our focus needs, therefore, to be less on one event or set of events than on a broader understanding of how power operates in this society and in the world, and what the implications are. For example, the trade agreement that is proposed now and may even pass, probably will pass, that will essentially take away the possibility of a living wage for American workers, take away the power and ability of government to limit unhealthy product entry into the United States, do incredible environmental damage, and so on. I am very disappointed in many members of the American Congress, particularly in Oregon, which is sort of weird. And I am convinced that the president has not read all of the documents and or doesn't really care about the implications of this. He's following a script, and the script is essentially one that assumes things are cool. It's just a few problems that need to be ironed out, and they can be ironed out through treaties and so on. I want to hear from you, though, less focused on those things than on the reality of the situation we're in. When Naomi Klein says this changes everything, she's talking about the reality of climate change. And she's talking about how that is an overwhelming, a looming force in the society, in the world, that really makes it irrelevant for us to be worrying and struggling with less than a profound understanding of the crisis we're in. Capitalism as a system, as things get worse, will have to take more and more from all of us to survive. And it will. It has the power. It has the strength. Now, there's another issue that I think needs to be made clear. The current struggle within the ordinary political world, in which the Republican Party has been essentially captured by a small number of very, very wealthy individuals, and has in the process of that, been propagandized as a right-wing understanding of American history. If you consider this, that you may listen to KABU, or you may listen to even mainstream media, MSNBC or CBS or NBC regular, you're listening to a different version of history than Fox News. The Murdoch Fox News, supported by the right, is an incredibly alternate understanding of the universe. And that is heard and understood and believed by a huge number, particularly of older Americans. And it's impossible to crack that belief system with any kind of certainty in the face of so much money being poured into propaganda. I want to hear from you, though. I want to hear from you about what is to be done in the face of a vast military-industrial complex and in the face of an enormously powerful system of control, including a right wing that drives a lot of this, these understandings. As the climate deteriorates, the environment becomes more and more destroyed, the health and wealth and sanity of American workers all are endangered, and not just American workers, workers throughout the world. Remember, when you buy a pair of Nike shoes, when you buy many, many products, what you're really buying, and you have very little choice often, is products worked by workers who make 50 cents an hour or 60 cents an hour or maybe less. Let's hear from you. 231-8187. Francis, you're on the air.
There's so much to talk about. It's also related. The personhood of corporations, I think, is one of the culprits here.
Mm-hmm.
The use of fear, though, the fear of being attacked is so powerful that people go along with a lot of stuff when they're afraid for their lives, and whether it's real or not, the fear that something might happen to them is being used, I think, quite a bit right now. But the corporate personhood, just recently, now this is something that I've talked about for a long time, about how if these corporations were not given that status, they wouldn't be able to get away with so much, you know. But the conversation on the media, the regular press, was very interesting to me the last couple of days because of the corporations that are being charged with criminal charges. The new Attorney General Lynch just came out with several charges against large banks. Mm-hmm. The way they were handling the exchange, the monetary exchange.
Yep.
And they were fined billions of dollars. But what was interesting to me was the conversation among these analysts in the press was, well, yeah, because you can't put a corporation in jail, so you have to fine them. You can't put them in jail because they're not a person. And they're saying that openly. They are not a person. So I would like to see, at some point, and I've said this before, that somebody, I think there are people in lesser positions in some of those corporations who are actually being charged with criminal charges. One of those people needs to say, I want the same rights as this corporation. I want to not go to jail. Just fine me. If you can't put a corporation in jail because it's not a person, then it's not a person.
Well, that's an interesting point right
they
there.
They need to not have the same rights as people.
Yeah, I think
the industrial complex and the military industrial complex, the world has become too small. Communication is too vast for us to continue to use the illogical, resort to the illogical, really illogical choice of fighting with weapons. It's not necessary anymore. It's stupid, really. And it's very obvious that it is. What happened in Ireland, although some may not see it, is a perfect example about how people talking to each other can change things. Because Ireland is considered a very conservative Catholic country. But they just overwhelmingly voted to approve or support same-sex marriages. And that was done in a very small country, but the manner in which the communication occurred was pretty outstanding.
I agree with you about Ireland in particular. I'm going to let other people talk, Francis,
right.
But I think you've made
some... But the thing about corporations not being people, people are actually saying that on the news right now.
Mm-hmm.
You can't put a corporation in jail because it's not a person.
Right.
And that's exactly the truth. It's not a person.
Right. And I think your point, which is that if logically corporations are people, then the operators of those corporations are the people responsible, then they should be able to be put in jail. But it doesn't happen.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying that they are going to try to charge some of those people that work for this corporation.
Mm.
Who are doing the job of the corporation, they're going to try to charge them with charges in which they can be put in jail. One of those people needs to stand up and say, well, if I can be put in jail, then how come this corporation can't be?
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much for the call, Francis. I want to mention another aspect of this, and one of the things that I think is so important is to understand the craziness of the time in which we live. Gulf Wars 1 and 2 were essentially wars about oil. There's no question about that. Gulf War 1 ended early and left the Bush power structure very much dissatisfied. Dick Cheney and his operatives, essentially using 9/11 as an excuse, went into Iraq, destroyed a dictatorship-based quiet and a relatively orderly society, dismissing, as we did so, the military that were there and the governmental structure that was there, and introduced a Shia government in what is a largely Sunni, previously Sunni system, by no means a democracy. I'm not trying to suggest that. In the process of all of this, we stumbled into a situation in which we are now participants in a vast war built around sectarian belief systems and power relations over which the United States has done very little in the way of real analysis. We are, in fact, to a large extent, on the right, making assumptions about the intentions of Iran and, at the same time, engaged in a war that I don't really think can ever end and certainly cannot be won in Iraq and Syria with this so-called ISIS that is kind of like, and this is really an important point, kind of like a resurgence of the early days of the expansion of Islam way back in the, you know, in the 700s, 800s. So we need to understand that this is a profound, serious political challenge coming out of a profound and serious rift within Islam. And it's something that over which we have virtually no control. The goal, the initial goal here to seize the oil and control the oil is still uncertain. Even that is still uncertain. Meanwhile, many people are dying, and the United States is about, I believe, to re-enter the conflict in Iraq and Syria with military force, with boots, as we say, on the ground. All of this in the interest, essentially, of an adventure around the production of petroleum, even as the United States tears itself apart environmentally to produce more petroleum products to be sold on world markets. I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Micah.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Have you noticed these things going on in Spain in the last...
Well, yeah. There's actually a left-wing movement gaining power there.
Exactly. And it's a new party. Mm-hmm. That is a new political party outside of, very similar to the United States, the two major parties that have been to either the... I'm not sure the names of their two major parties, but it's basically right and left. And they've been ruling the country for the last 30 years. And no matter who's in charge, it's the rich getting richer, everybody else getting screwed, just like here, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And the people in Spain, they have a little more of a history of rising up, at least recently, in the Basque region and whatnot. Mm-hmm. But we certainly have plenty of people here that are knowledgeable and experienced with activism. And they're gaining ground by starting their new party. You have to leave the system that is completely corrupt. You're not going to get any change or anything new or anything better from a completely corrupt system, the two major parties. You have to abandon the two major parties. This is the major, biggest thing. If everybody leaves the two major parties, you leave their game. You're not playing their game anymore. And you only elect people who aren't obligated to the 1%, to the oil industry, to the banks, to the big corporations. It's the only option. There's two major problems in the United States. Deep brainwashing, left and right. Democrats don't want to leave the Democratic Party. They're still holding on to it like their little security blanket, even though it's completely corrupt. Obama's given more offshore drilling leases, more drone attacks, more blah, 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 more, you know, it's just more oppression all the time. Rich getting richer. During the Obama administration, only the 1% has gotten significant wage increases and significant profits.
Well, it's certainly true that it's certainly true that the average worker in America has earned less and has not kept up with the cost of living at all.
Yeah, and Clinton and Obama didn't help that one single bit.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Another thing people need to remember is that the number of people nationwide that are officially registered as Republicans is dropping. And it's down now. Some estimates are below 20% of the, like 18-19% of the U.S. population that actually claims themselves registered as Republican.
Mm-hmm.
It might be as high as 25-28%, but it's only in the around 20-some percent. And around 30-some percent are registered Democrats. So that leaves like 50% of the country is not registered in either party. So we already have a disgruntled majority of the population that's ready for something new. They just don't have anything new to join. What is there? There's nothing that has any significance. So we have to come together in a new party. And that's why I started the Revolutionary Party for revolution of every kind on every level. And the Revolutionary Party's idea is revolutionize everything. Revolutionize the healthcare system. Revolutionize our energy grid and our energy generation. Revolutionize our social programs, our schools. Revolutionize everything that needs to be fixed. Revolutionize our infrastructure. Revolutionize the internet. Broadband should be everywhere. Revolutionize everything is the motto. And number two, harmonize everything. That's another huge, you're talking about our overall system. Our overall system is based on capitalism, cutthroat, me kill you, me beat you, winners and losers. We need to harmonize everything, revolutionize everything, harmonize everything. We need to bring everything into harmony instead of everything into conflict and competition. And it's a huge concept, but it's also very, very simple. You know, it boils it down to one word, harmony, harmonize.
Okay.
Everything in nature needs to be in harmony with each other in order for everything to be healthy and to be working, right?
Yeah.
You can't just fight Mother Nature all the time. And
well, look, is there
every single country that doesn't see our way.
Right.
You know, we have to get into the mindset of what works for
if people...
If it doesn't work with everything, it's no good.
If people are interested in this, is there a website or other way to reach your progressives?
It's on launchrock.com.
Okay.
And there's a another website called Popular Pop, P-O-P-U-L-R, no E, just or A, it's just L-R,
mm-hmm.
P-O-P-L-R. And the manifesto,
mm-hmm.
the charter is there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been trying to organize people, but it's very, very disheartening because of the brainwashing. The people are either completely brainwashed by AM talk radio or they're completely brainwashed by the left wing's whatever. I don't even believe in left wing liberal media. To me, all the media is completely corporate. I don't even believe in, like, but that's another thing people need to realize is there's a very small percentage of people that are completely out there on the far, far right fringe. They get all the play in the news because it's a spectacular. Oh, the guy who stood up to the government in Nevada or whatever, or this crazy right-wing guy that killed some gay person or whatever, that killed an abortion doctor. The most extreme stuff gets all this hype, but that's really a tiny, tiny percentage of the overall U.S. population.
Okay.
A lot of people are a lot like you. They've lived and seen all this. They know it's all one big lie. They just don't have any other thing to join. Revolutionary Party. We could all join it.
Okay, man.
We can rise up peacefully. If we have to not play their game.
Okay, I'm going to get some other folks on. I want to thank you for your call, and I wish you luck with your Progressive Party. Your effort is certainly interesting. Thank you very much for the call, man. All right, 231-8187. It's more than just what is to be done. The problems in our society today need a very careful and deep analysis. The most important thing that I see going on is a tendency throughout the most recent history, really from World War II on, to create a powerful centralized military-industrial complex. And I would add a third force to that, a military-industrial congressional complex. I am continuously amazed at the inability of Congress to mount a liberal reaction. I'm not talking about left-wing here, a liberal reaction to the terrible, terrible decisions that are being made at every level. The recent Supreme Court decisions really are terrifying, and I don't know how to check that or how to balance that. I want to hear from you, your ideas, 231-8187. Jeff, you're on the air.
Hey, Joe. Thanks for the conversation and all of your efforts over the years.
Thank you.
One of your earlier callers talked about perspective,
mm-hmm.
the perspectives that we have. And I think it's, you know, coming wherever we're coming from is critically important. And looking at the underlying principles is... and being able to see what the underlying principles are is really critical. But the difficulty is when we get to the real world, not what we've got in our heads. And as you know, working with other people is tough, right? We think, oh yeah, this is the best way to go, and then we come together with a few other people and everybody else has ideas too.
Sure.
If when we come to people, the majority of people that I've come in contact with in my life, whether they're on the right or on the left, if they don't have an example, they're probably not going to get to it just in their head by their imagination. And it seems to me that there are some really great examples of what's happening in the world right now as far as how humans can organize together in new ways. And the whole wiki movement is one of them. The Creative Commons. There's a lot of things that are happening with human organization that are not based on these old, antiquated ideas that come out of the Industrial Revolution, which includes democracy. And while democracy, I think, has some really cool stuff, it also has some difficult things involved. Now, capitalism itself, like the whole, you know, that whole system clearly is dangerous. But my point here is that if we're going to find new ways to evolve and to change, then it has to be effective.
Okay, I agree with you. I think that the possibilities of a massive organization, a massive movement, with a good analysis, as we say, is it's possible. It's difficult. We're all of us, even those of us who are very politically, see ourselves as very politically aware, are essentially day after day, moment after moment, week after week, essentially propagandized to a certain worldview. However, the overwhelming force of climate change, the overwhelming obviousness of the injustice being done to persons of color, to ordinary working people all over the world, are forces that can lead us to inevitably some kind of change. The question is, can we create a change that is democratic, that is reasonable, that is possible, and that serves the interests of ordinary people? Anyway, thanks a lot for the call, man.
Well, let me just say one more thing.
Sure.
And that is, another one of your callers talked about reaching out and talking to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that goes just like on your show or individually within our own communities.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's important that we reach out across the boundaries of communities as well. Mm-hmm. To the Native American community who is here still. Right,
mm-hmm.
The myth of them being gone is not true.
Right. No, that's important. You're right.
And across to the African American community, if we're in a different community, and across to the liberal community, and across to whatever the community is, we need to the conversations need to continue to happen and to stir the pot, as it were.
Yeah, I agree with you. I got to do a little business, so I'm going to let you go, man.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you for the call. Coming up this morning on KBOO at 9 on Alternative Radio, journalist Robert Scheer. God, I remember him from way back. Robert Scheer speaks on free thought and self-censorship. At 10 on Air Cascadia, Chris Andre reports live from Salem and the rally to say no LNG, no pipelines. This is an important rally, and I forgot last week to hype it. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support in our recent spring membership drive. If you missed it, shame on you. You can still become a member by going to kboo.fm on your computer and clicking on Donate Today. We need your support. We don't have corporate support. We don't have big government grants. So it's really up to you. And your ability to contribute and to support this station is crucial to the free range of ideas and struggle that this station represents, as well as the best, of course, in music. 231-8187, we're talking about essentially the power in America and what is to be done. Harvey, you're on the air.
Hi, Joe. Well, you know, capitalism, it should have more of a it should be nicer to the people. You know, it seems to have a lot of selfishness, a lot of mean-spirited. It's illogical. I'm looking at a headline here. This is dated November the 20th, 2015. It says Republican budget could kick 11 million people off of food stamps, and it's so wrong, because we give half of our gross national product to the military-industrial complex. When you take food stamps away from people, they're hungry. They will turn to crime. And this will drive the crime rate up and lead to more prisons the proliferation of prisons for profit. These Republican senators and people, they have everything they need. And when you cut food stamps away from people, you're cutting it a lot from the youth, the elderly, and vets. And the youth need good quality food, so do the elderly, and so do the vets. And what makes this really horrendous is that the U.S. Agricultural and food shipments overseas are projected to reach $149 billion, $149 billion in food exports in 2014. So for money, we're selling the food that would keep Americans alive and healthy. And I don't understand that. I don't understand the meanness. And I say feed America first.
Well, I think you're raising an interesting point about an oddity of capitalism, which is its short-sightedness historically and its meanness. And I don't know, you know, theoretically there's arguments that say, well, this is an inevitable consequence of a system that argues for something called free enterprise, which really isn't free and not very enterprising. But it is odd. It is very, very odd. And I think that it is it speaks to the darker side of humanity. And here we are, again, struggling in an environment which is not friendly to human beings. You know, the last time we had a really positive government approach, and it was not an anti-capitalist approach, by the way, but a really positive approach, was back during the days of the Great Depression and the great presidency of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Anyway, I really appreciate your call, man. I'm going to get some more calls in. Thanks a lot.
Sure. Thank you.
231-8187. Give us a call. Jack, you're on the air.
Along these lines, the spearhead for what you're calling for, I believe, is a United Front Against Austerity. There is a party in the U.S., United Front Against Austerity. They're aligned with the Tax Wall Street Party. Their central premise is that Wall Street must be forced to pay a turnover a transaction tax on all turnover.
That sounds good.
Transactions themselves. It's not a novel idea. It's been around for a long time. It gets downplayed. It gets ignored by the politicians, particularly because so much of their money is coming from Wall Street. And as far as what has been proposed here, we had Podemos mention the Spanish movement. It's promising, but it's not Syriza. Syriza is the stronger and the more poignant movement, anti-austerity movement in Europe, and that hasn't gotten a whole lot of attention either, even in the progressive media. So you need a united front against austerity. That's essential. Just as the previous caller is talking about, forcing people into poverty, into mm-hmm. desperation, into dire straits, and the austerity ghouls need to be cut off at the knees.
Kevin, have you got a website that people could go to?
Well, let me see if I can bring up the United Front Against Austerity. I think that's pretty easy to find.
Well, I bet you. Let's assume that's there, and we can move on.
United Front Against Austerity. Google that, and you will get there. Tax Wall Street Party, you will get there. There's a lot out there. Okay.
Okay. Thanks a lot, man.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. All right. We have lots of callers. 231-8187. Who do we got now? Mike, you're on the air.
All right, Joe. I hope this isn't too rambling, but for one thing, this is such an overwhelming, incredible monster. You know, the right power brokers have created such an overwhelming monster. I mean, it's like the perfect storm. But let me be real quick here. I made like a little 10-point list of stuff as I listen to you here. And from what I know, from the minute Obama got into office, he was intimidated by the military. He has to depend on them for his transportation, his rides. They just totally wrapped him up. Okay. Then we've got a total out of control media. I mean, this is so overwhelming. The takeover of our news. How about the privatization of all these things that belong in the public domain? Prisons, medical, everything.
Mm-hmm.
I hope I'm not rambling too much. I got number four here. President with no backbone. God, I voted for him twice. I love him. But the man just, I think he's overwhelmed. And what about our going into these countries? We're totally incompetent. We don't have any idea what these people believe or think. And we go in there and try to fight them and deal with them without analyzing anything. We've just made a mess.
Okay,
let's see. No information in the information. We're buried, Joe. We're buried. How in the devil? I can't think of any way out of this. And what about the first do no harm on military? Okay. Mischief by these think tank folks constantly. We're out there working every day trying to make a living. The Koch brothers and all these people are constantly, they've created such an overwhelming mess that it's, how are we going to start? I'm going to get off, but I'm 67 years old, and I'm glad I'm at the jumping off place because this is really insane.
Well, thank you very much for the call, man. And do not despair. Things can change, surprisingly.
Well, I'll get out and do the footwork or get on my bike or whatever, but it is so overwhelming that I feel so incompetent. I think every American. It's just we don't even know where to begin.
Well, you know,
how do you make a list? They've got us wrapped up so tight, Joe, with so much. They've blasted us with so much BS here, you know.
Well, I understand. Understand your despair, but remember, despair is not very useful.
I know. All right.
Okay, man. Hang
I'll
in there.
Listen, but yeah, I really worry about it. We're at a tipping point here. We're like at a perfect storm.
Okay. Well, thanks for the call.
Joe. Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, 231-8187. We've been talking about kind of the overall arching problem of a military-industrial complex, of an oncoming disaster in terms of global change, weather change, and so on, and of the incredibly foolish behaviors of the ruling class in the society, short-sighted, unwilling to share, essentially very aggressive in the world, and creating endless war for endless dollars. I want to hear from you. 231-8187. Richard, you're on the air.
Good morning. See, I have just got a little information. I want to talk about three words, try to give you the definition, try to give the audience the definitions
okay.
that they need when they reach out across the cultural boundaries that separate us.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. The first one is a very common word, commonly misunderstood, is person. Person is a word derived from the Greek word persona, which means the mask that was worn by an actor to portray a character. Today, in law, person means one who is capable of doing business. A corporate, and here's the definition at ORS 174-100 subsection 5, mm-hmm. which is statutory construction. This is what you have to know in order to read the statutes, okay? Person means a firm, corporation, joint stock company, limited liability company, or an association. And that's who a person is, and an individual as well. Those are all capable of doing business. Most of us are people. Most of us are human beings, and we all need to start divesting ourselves of our personhood before we start looking at others. The next word is democracy. That's a Greek word. It's ruled by a group or a mob. And in our country, according to the Constitution of the United States, we have every state upon entry into the Union is guaranteed a Republican form of government. Not the party Republican, but a representative form of government where we choose from among our peers the best, the brightest, most politically astute of us to go and do our political business while the rest of us attend to the important parts of living life. That's a Republican form of government instead of democracy. We do not have, and that the problem with the democracy is that so many of us are illiterate and we don't know what we're talking about and we cannot be relied upon as a source, okay? The third word, well, I'm going to pass on the third word for now.
Okay.
If we can just focus on person is not a people. People are on top of the social hierarchy. Here's a good one. The first sentence of the Oregon Constitution, the first Article 1, Section 1 says, we declare that all men, when they form a social compact, are equal in right, that all power is inherent in the people, that all free governments are founded on their authority and instituted for their peace, safety, and happiness, and they, the people, have at all times a right to alter, reform or abolish.
Okay, we're actually
in such right manner as yeah. they may think proper. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're running out of time. Do we have time for another call? Mark, go ahead. Real quick. Mark?
Openculture.com. I think the corporados make certain realities taboo, like free and sharing. And on this website, openculture.com, we're given 700 free movies, including Slacker, Macbeth, Alice in Wonderland, a silent movie from 1915, and 700 free ebooks, and 400 audiobooks, including 1984. It's quite wondrous. There's a lecture on Kierkegaard and the crisis in religion. Kierkegaard tried to outrage instead of entertain. That's a good model for us. And thanks for your energy and your passion. I share all your frustration.
I thank you very much for the call. We're out of time. I'll see y'all next week. Hopefully Abe will be able to be in with me. And you all stay tuned for the finest in public affairs programming, the finest in music. Always support KBOO. Remember, we are the only authentic progressive radio in the region.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of a film screening of COINTELPRO 101 Monday, June 1st at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. COINTELPRO 101 is a one-hour documentary produced by the Freedom Archives explaining an illegal FBI program coined as the Counterintelligence Program, spearheaded by J. Edgar Hoover, that targeted revolutionaries of the 60s and 70s. There will also be a presentation of ongoing local work and Q&A